New York City, the survival capital of the world. This is Radio Doomsday Live. I'm your host, Mike Luckman, and I'm happy to have Neil Freer as my guest for almost the whole hour. Neil is going to be talking about the legendary Anunnaki from fabled Planet X. But before I get to Neil, I want to talk a bit about the hurricane, Hurricane Sandy, the storm of the century, which hit New York City and surrounding states with a vengeance. I have never lived through anything like this in my lifetime, and I'm sure most New Yorkers are just about all New Yorkers have never experienced anything like this. It was a fierce combination of the weather elements coming together on Halloween of all times, and I was plunged into the darkness for 5 days. Now, I got to tell you that on this show, I've talked for many, many months now about preparing for these eventualities, but when it strikes home, if you're not ready for it, you're not ready for it. I was ready for it, but I could have been more prepared, and that's what my message is to you folks out there listening to the program tonight. You need to stock up on all kinds of basics from food, survival food, as well as water, and as well as, of course, batteries and flashlights and candles and that sort of thing. Those are absolutely essential to your survival. I mean, here in New York City, as big a city as it is, everything ground to a halt, and you went into supermarkets, and you just the supermarkets weren't even open, and the local delis were long lines, and the food by the second day was already spoiled, and they couldn't sell it, and it was really a very, very, very trying situation, and. As I say, we were really quite lucky because we got spared from the brunt of it, at least where I live, but other areas weren't spared at all. And the subway system, even though it was flooded, it could have been much, much more severe in the tunnels, too. So, you know, these are the things that we have to prepare for. There are people right now, millions of people in the dark, not only around the New York metropolitan area, but in other surrounding areas. This is a very serious matter and something that we really have to pay attention to. Now, it struck me that when I talk about the possibility of the power grid going out, which would have disastrous consequences, where there would be no food or medical supplies or even water, because even water in an apartment or a home needs electricity for you to be able to get it. This is, I'm afraid, an example of what, just a small example of what might happen in the instance of the power grid going out. And, of course, NASA scientists and others have been, including myself, have been warning that this could very well happen within the coming year. The solar maximum peaks in 2013, and it's an enormous amount of energy being given off by these solar flares. They usually go in the opposite direction from Earth, but there have been some glancing glows that have come toward Earth, and they seem to be more and more of those and of greater magnitude. So we have to be really careful about this. I want to introduce my guest, Neil Freer. Neil Freer was a close friend of the late Zechariah Sitchin, who was also my friend, who lived here in New York City, and who popularized almost single-handedly the concept of the Anunnaki and the legendary occupants of Planet X, which many believe, including the Mayans, incidentally, may be on the way back here to Earth, and perhaps this is why we're experiencing some of the profound environmental disasters that we now have. Welcome, Neil, to the show.
Well, it's a pleasure being on with you. I have to say that I was born and brought up in Poughkeepsie, and not too far above you there, 75 miles above the city. And I remember in 1938, I was 8 years old, we had a hurricane at that particular point that hit up through the Hudson Valley and hit New York State and New York City. And I remember as a child seeing a roof a pitch roof being torn off and flipped off the a house about a block away.
Sure.
And you know, the hurricanes in New York State haven't been that bad. Well, as you're more aware, I'm sure, than I am at this
right.
particular point, up until just recently. And you mentioned the fact that, you know, some people are beginning to believe, or some people do believe, as I do, that the basic cause of climate change and earth changes, you know, more severe earthquakes, more rapid, showing up more frequently in places that normally don't even have them sometimes, and hurricanes and forming over land, which is not the usual procedure by any means.
Do you think that Planet X is responsible, that it's coming closer, and for some reason we just aren't able to see it yet with the naked eye?
There's two things involved here. As far as seeing it, Mary Rodwell, I don't know, maybe you recognize her name. She's an Australian lady who has gradually worked into the area of being counselor to abductees and alien contactees, especially children, and has had probably, she's done something close to 1,600 different cases. She wrote me the other day. I met Mary and become good friends with her. I've spoken at the same conferences on UFO or mm-hmm. alien situation as she has. And she sent through this compilation of actual videos that have been taken. And I'll send it to you. I'm making a note here now to do just that. And some of the videos are supposedly Nibiru, Planet X, Nibiru in the Sumerian, as they call it. So as far as seeing is concerned, it's hard to bet these things. You know, it's hard to prove them out because the astronomers are totally uptight and intimidated about it. I know that there was one researcher whose name slips me right off, Mark somebody, I think, who actually, in order to try to affirm something about it, called around to all the major observatories in the United States
right.
and asked them, you know, he said, I'm doing an article on this topic, and what can you tell me?
Was this Mark Hazelwood by any chance?
Maybe Hazelwood.
He wrote a self-published book or a book from a small publisher dealing with Planet X. He was the son of a famous country musician. I forget the man's name. I think Lee Hazelwood.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's who it was.
I'm just curious. Mark Hazelwood himself doesn't have too much credibility. I'm just wondering who it might be. But anyway, you think that this woman's photographs might be the real deal?
Well, some of them look very convincing. That's about as far as I will go in this particular mm-hmm. point. But they are certainly worth looking at because the compilation is from all over the world. And
Does she give coordinates or some way that we could, you know, check out the locations?
No, I don't think so. I don't mm-hmm. think so. She gives the locations where they were taken,
okay.
and perhaps some of the positional information that you can get. You know, whether it's the left or the right side of the sun, and
okay.
most of them are close as a shiny round object in back of the sun. And
no,
so,
Neil, is she associated? I'm just curious. I just want to dispense with this if we can. There's this woman, Nancy, a leader who's a contactee and who was responsible almost herself for popularizing the subject of Planet X on the Internet. She's based in Wisconsin, and she runs a website called Zeta Talk and claims that she's been in touch with these beings from, I guess, Zeta Reticuli, and she doesn't have very good credibility at all. I'm just wondering if there's any kind of an affiliation there, or this is totally a different person, I take it.
Well, this is a totally different person, and Mary Rodwell is a native of Australia.
Oh, okay.
And she has, she's the other end of the scale. She has a great deal of credibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't consulted Nancy Leader's site in literally years. I just kind of gave up on it. I'm not even passing judgment on it. I just don't go there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I think it's a good place to even begin our conversation here, but with regard to the climate change and earth changes that we see happening. And
yeah.
I think your warning to people is excellent, because and timely. In fact, it's high time that the government's got off this information, because
yeah.
I think things are only going to get worse.
Okay, Neil. Now Zechariah Sitchin himself was asked, particularly in his later years, he was asked, and with the symbolism of the December 21st date of the Mayan calendar, December 21st, 2012, which is incredibly only about what, 6 or 7 weeks away now. It's
yes.
just unbelievable. I remember when it was years away. Now it's almost upon us. But he was asked and spoke about where Planet X, how far away he thought that Planet X might be. And he said, not that I necessarily agree with him in any way, but on this point, but he said he projected perhaps 60 years more to go to get into our neck of the solar system. But of course, however he computed that, I'm not sure whether he took into consideration something that's very difficult to measure, because I understand as Planet X makes its very wide swinging orbit from the outer edge of the solar system into the inner solar system, that there, I suppose, a wobble effect, or at least it's not a constant speed necessarily all the way through, and therefore there could be a lot of leeway as far as when it arrives in our backyard.
Yes, I have to totally agree with you. He did it on purely calendrical kind of computation
mm-hmm.
from what he knew from the ancient records. And
right.
He said 20,058, as I recall. And
yeah.
On the other hand, you can go to the other extreme is someone like John Moore, thelibertyman.com.
Yeah.
He, if you're familiar with his site, he says that the insiders in the intelligence community that he maintains contact with are telling him that it's going to hit the fan, 20 just in a year or two, between 2013 and 2020.
Yeah, yeah. John Moore also talks about the Anunnaki, that the government is aware of the Anunnaki, and that's a big secret. Now, for those who may not know who the Anunnaki are this highly advanced race that supposedly, based on Sitchin's work as well as the work of others, indicates that these are highly advanced beings that have came down here in the early stages of pre-humans and jump-started the human race by combining their DNA with our DNA to produce what originally, I hate to say this, were a race of slaves, namely us, who were eventually freed, but meanwhile were used to dig gold, which they needed to line their atmosphere. Is that correct?
Yes, and I also think that, they were taking huge amounts of gold out of here. This planet apparently in the solar system is the one that has the most gold. And so they were, Sitchin says that his interpretation and understanding of the records that, and what they taught us was that they were taking the gold out to seed in some sort of molecular form their atmosphere, because it, on their planet, it extends way out past the sun on a huge elliptical orbit, and it takes 3,600 years to go around the sun once. It is a member of our solar system, and I would also emphasize that it is a planet, because there are some people out there who insist that it's a failed star. It's a brown dwarf or a red dwarf or whatever.
Okay.
But the fact of the matter is that the surface temperature of even a failed star, brown dwarf, is something like 1,000 degrees. So no human creature is going to live there, and yet they taught us that was their home planet. It's apparently about Uranus size, and there is an extraordinary, if you go to xfacts.com, an extraordinary interview there that's recorded, and you can play it on YouTube, between Harrington of the Naval Observatory and Zechariah Sitchin.
I've seen that. We're going to take a break for just a minute. We'll be right back.
Sure.
For sponsor. Radio Doomsday Live is brought to you by Emergency Foods. That's by Emergency Foods. In an emergency, let me tell you this from personal experience, you can't eat gold, but you would want to eat the food products from Legacy Premium Foods that are available from By Emergency Foods. They can be reached at 888-543-7345. That's 888-543-7345. It's not only excellent tasting, I would say at least as good as, I mean, we're not talking army rations here. We're talking really excellent food, let's say, that's as good as it's freeze-dried. It has a shelf life of 25 years, and it tastes as good as anything you're going to find in a supermarket. So be in contact and buy from Buy Emergency Foods, 888-543-7345. That's 888-543-7345. Incidentally, Radio Doomsday Live is broadcast every Thursday night at 12 midnight Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Pacific Time, on bbsradio.com station number 2. That's bbsradio.com station number 2, 12 midnight Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Pacific Time. And we always have cutting-edge guests. Like Neil Freer, last week we had the Mayan Pope from Guatemala. You know, it's amazing, Neil. Here the a delegation of Mayans are here, including the Mayan Pope, Don Tomas Calvo, who addressed the United Nations. And then I was privileged to interview him. And before they could get out of town, of course, the hurricane hit. And we were talking about the show, about the earth changes and how serious they might get. And then they got back to Guatemala, and less than a week later, Guatemala got hit with a 7.2 earthquake, and there were immediately at least 50 deaths, and I'm sure by now there have been more. I tried to get the Mayan Pope to take a stand on how serious things might get, because I've had other guests on the show, other Mayan elders, and I've been in contact with other Mayan elders, like Humboldt Men, who's located in the Yucatan. He's a Mayan solar priest, and he believes in Planet X. He believes in a possible pole shift, which could happen theoretically within 2 or 3 years, I hate to say. And, of course, he's very much, as a solar priest, concerned about what's going on in the sun. But I want to get back right now to the question of gold. You know, a friend of mine who doesn't believe in any of this stuff, doesn't believe in Sitchin, thinks that, that Sitchin is just, his theories are off the wall, he said, well, did you ever wonder why did these advanced extraterrestrial beings from Planet X, namely the Anunnaki, need humans to mine gold. Why couldn't they figure out a way using their technology to do it themselves? What would you say to that? How would you answer that question, Neil?
Well, first of all, if we pictured the situation 200,000 years ago, they said that they had first colonized our planet 450,000 years ago, and then they went for a couple of 100,000 years, and they got to a point about 200,000 years ago, and which corresponds, by the way, to the anthropological and paleontological evidence of when the first human woman showed up when they did the search for mitochondrial DNA around the world. So that and what the records say that their own people were mining gold and they got fed up with it, and I don't think that they would have had the manufacturing capabilities to on the planet here to do to actually create the machinery and stuff that would totally automate the process for them.
Mm-hmm.
And because they were at that particular point, they were rocket-based technology. Probably after they were here for several thousand years. Several thousand years ago, by the time they had developed that far, they probably were beginning to develop anti-grav. But for most of the time they were here, they were basically at a level of technology that was not very far ahead of ours right now.
Okay.
And I think it's good to make that kind of comparison. And also sociologically, they were still kind of violent. They fought among themselves. They blew up one of their own spaceports. One group blew up the spaceport of another one in the Sinai. And that, of course, that brings up the whole point of what Genesis is in the Old Testament. Genesis is simply a 3,000-year younger rewrite of the original Sumerian documents that contain all the information that the Anunnaki taught us. The whole business of in the Old Testament, the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, that was actually a case where some of the younger ones on one side were given permission to use what they called the ancient weapons, the old weapons. They went and dragged out, apparently, atomic weapons out of hiding someplace and blew up one of the spaceports. And the Sitchin points out in, I think it's the 12th planet, if from space you can see this triangular-shaped black mark that fills up most of the Sinai where stones, it's totally black stones, and there's still radioactivity there from those explosions in the springs and so on in the entire area. So the point being that Genesis is a rewrite, a skewed theopolitical rewrite to make the Hebrews the chosen people, because as Sir Lawrence Gardner, who I think should have gotten a Nobel Prize just as well, right alongside of Sitchin, he takes off where Sitchin leaves off. He has demonstrated quite clearly that things like Moses. Moses was not Moses by name, but he was Amos, a very important person. And Sir Lawrence Gardner shows quite clearly that he was Akhenaten. The unpopular Egyptian ruler that kind of got forced out of Egypt.
Right.
And when he went up a mountain, there was no Mount Sinai in those days. And so the mountain he went up was Mount Horeb. And when he went up there, he was the supposed revelation of the Ten Commandments was no revelation at all, because hundreds of years before that, the Ten Commandments almost 99.9% verbatim were contained as verse one, stanza 125 in the Egyptian Book of the Dead. The Genesis is a pretty skewed rewrite of the original, very precise Sumerian documents and histories and so on. And so when we get back to there's so much around even climate change. Many New Agers particularly, but a lot of people have become enamored of this whole concept of the possible end of the world when the Mayan calendar runs out, and in 2012, coming up in 6 weeks, but they don't, apparently, they haven't read Sitchin, where he documents quite clearly that Nimgishida, the son of Enki, who was one of the two brothers, Enki and Enlil, were the two Anunnaki brothers who basically ran the planet here, the colony planet. And incidentally, it's groundbreaking, but incidentally, as Sir Lawrence Gardner has pointed out, Enki was Adonai, the Lord of the Old Testament, and Enlil was Jehovah Yahweh. So this is one of the reasons why the full disclosure is very slow in coming.
Let me just stop for 1 second. There has been an uptick, a very sizable uptick in the number of UFO sightings that started in the beginning of this last New Year's, following New Year's Eve, this last one. There's been a demonstrable increase of UFO sightings worldwide. And I'm wondering whether you feel that that this might suggest that the Anunnaki might be given the possible location of their planet now, or the nearing the possibility of it getting closer and closer to Earth. Do you think that that some of these craft that are being seen, or these interdimensional objects that are being seen, might be connected to the Anunnaki, piloted by Anunnaki? Are we in for an imminent invasion or landing, open landing by the Anunnaki? When do you think that might actually happen, if at all?
Well, I try to include too many facts all at once, and I apologize for that. I may even be confusing people, but the point I was leading up to was that, as Sitchin has shown quite clearly, that one of the sons of Enki, Nin-Gishida, his name was in the Sumerian, was also Quetzalcoatl in the Americas, and he was given jurisdiction here, and he was the engineer, architect, scientist, and generalist that was responsible for teaching the Mayans and the people of the Americas the advanced architectural techniques and so on that they used to build the pyramids here. And he taught them the astronomy they knew. They had no telescopes. Mm. They had nothing. And they even say in a few codices that we still have kept in libraries in Europe that they were taught by the god. And so he was in Egypt. He was known as Thoth, and he was known as Quetzalcoatl over here in the Americas. And he eventually became known as Hermes to the Greeks when they were dealing with his history. And he said, "I'll be back." He left, and he told them, "We'll be back." And he was Anunnaki, tall, husky, white skinned, and bearded, and that's the way they anticipated they would look when they came back. Now, it's very possible, and this I would recommend that people consult through the web on the work of A.R. Borden, B-O-R-D-O-N. Pretty extraordinary stuff. He speaks of, I've been in contact with him personally, and I'm beginning to develop some real respect for what he's saying, which is quite extraordinary, and that is that he's part of a small group of humans from the United States and who meet with other small groups of humans selected from different parts of the planet once a year, and they meet in turn with a group of aliens, and they meet either on the surface of the planet or in a spaceship. And it's sort of just been doing this for 9 years, and one of the alien participants in the in this console called the Link, L-I-N-K, check it out on the web, is our Anunnaki. And he has learned that there are Anunnaki who never left the planet here.
Yeah, I understand that Zechariah Sitchin felt that way too, that that was a possibility. But what you're saying is extraordinary. Do you really think that there's any, in your mind, is there any weight to this belief that the humans are regularly or occasionally meeting with Anunnaki who haven't left this planet?
Well, yes, I do. I mean, is it relative to the story that we're always being fed by those who are in charge of the cover-ups? It would sound like pretty far out. But on the other hand, we've been told by reputable ex-military or military that alien civilizations have been in contact with governments here, have made treaties with them, and that, as John Moore points out, you know, they know quite a bit about them, and they are not telling.
Do we know that John Moore, by the way, I'm familiar with this website, do we know that John Moore, when he claims to have contacts in the intelligence community, that in fact he does have these contacts? And then that leads to another question, and that is, are these people reliable, or are they possibly disinformation experts?
Well, the only thing you can do, the only thing I can do is listen to them carefully and evaluate them on the basis of consistency and any kind of factual thing that I can, I can vet myself. And and that gets to be, quite frankly, a bitch.
Yeah, sure.
You know, because of the depth of cover-up and denial and ridicule and that sort of thing.
Okay,
but,
hold that thought. We're going to be right back. I just wanted to go for a moment to our sponsor, Buy Emergency Foods. In an emergency such as we just had here in New York City and environs, where there's a superstorm, in this case it was Hurricane Sandy, but wherever you might be living, it happened in an instant, and then you're in the dark and needing food, possibly. You don't want to be in that situation. So in an emergency, you can't eat cold, but you would want to eat Buy Emergency Foods products. They have legacy premium food, which is the best food out there on the market currently, of storable freeze-dried food that has a shelf life of 25 years, and stuff tastes good. And I strongly suggest that you call the people at Buy Emergency Foods. They're at 888-543-7345. That's 888-543-7345. You know, in dealing with Buy Emergency Foods, I found out something new that was quite interesting. I didn't know. Virtually all of the major survival food companies are located in Utah, which, of course, is where the Mormons are located. And the Mormons mandate that that people keep at least 3 months of food stored and water and everything else in the case of emergencies. So this came out, of course, around the time of Mitt Romney's campaign. But Buy Emergency Foods has by far the lowest prices on the internet or anywhere else for that matter. and this kind of food, and they have a great variety of food, and I strongly suggest you contact them at 888-543-7345. Now, Neil, I wanted to ask you about a guy by the name of Michael Tellinger, who's based in Africa, I believe, in South Africa, has written a book called, I have it right here, Slave Race of the Gods, in which he's talking specifically about the Anunnaki. And one of the things that he alleges is that our concept, or the idea, the actual idea of slavery, derived from the Anunnaki. And he's also blaming the Anunnaki for, for our warlike ways. Have you read the book, or what do you think of Tellinger's statements?
I haven't gotten to that particular one yet, but I have followed Michael Tellinger since he appeared on the scene. And I didn't at first agree with his conceptualization of those thousands of I guess thousands, if not hundreds, if hundreds, if not thousands, of stone circles that are all over the landscape down there in South Africa, as as some sort of metropolis. I think that they could have been gold mining test pits, or maybe even surface mining units. But anyway, yes, I'm familiar with Michael Dellinger's stuff, and I think that I think his insight with regard to us picking up certain things from the Anunnaki, like slavery, are right on. I think you can see it particularly in Western culture, because it goes back to a fact that Sitchin did not emphasize too much, but Enki and Enlil, the two brothers that ran the colony planet here, were usually at odds with each other, and one of the ways that showed up was their attitude, their individual attitudes in conflict with regard to humans. Enki was the scientist who, with his sister Ninhursag, did the genetic engineering to impinge Anunnaki genes on Homo erectus, and here we are. And so he was, he empathized with humans, and he tried to make things good for them, and so that when good things were happening to humans in the Old Testament, in Genesis particularly, it was always attributed to Adonai, the Lord. Well, if Sir Lawrence Gardner was right, then Adonai, the Lord, was actually Enki. And so, but when bad things were happening to him, to humans, it was always attributed to Jehovah Yahweh. You know, he was pretty nasty, and his attitude was, look, we created you as a slave race. Keep your place, mind your business, close your mouth, do the work, and everything will be okay. Mm-hmm. What we don't realize is, I think, to a great extent, is that those two attitudes, diverse attitudes, have followed us all the way through Western culture, in the sense that it's a matter of, I think the key word is emulation. Because it was Enki who initiated the Grail bloodline, Graal, special bloodline, all the way back. And Sir Lawrence Gardner was hired by 30 royal families in Europe to do genealogical work for them, and as a specialist. And he kept finding a reference to a special line of kings that went way back, and he would say to these royalty, what is this special line of kings? And they said, well, did you find my great-great-great-grandfather or something? And he said, no, level with me. What is this special line of kings that goes way back here? And they said, well, that's the Holy Grail. Graal, special bloodline, all the way back to Sumeria. Enki, knowing that the Anunnaki were going to phase off the planet, or phase back at least some of them, selected a human female. This is the second story of Adam and Eve. Remember, in Genesis, there's two stories of Adam and Eve. One is the actual creation of humans, and then the other one is later on in Genesis, where it says, to put it in very almost facetious slang, Eve goes to Adam and says, "Hey, man, I've got a kid from the Lord." And instead of getting pissed off and that she's out playing around, Adam says, in effect, "Wait, cool." This is because knowing that they were going to phase off, Enki selected a human female, fathers a child with her, and as Gardner points out again, the child's name was Cain. And people say, well, Cain was a bad guy. He killed his brother Abel. Well, the original Hebrew doesn't say that. The original Hebrew, as Gardner pointed out, says Cain was superior to Abel. And so what he did was he produced a child who was to be a foreman and then a king eventually, with extra genes, extra Anunnaki genes. And so they were taught in what we call mystery schools. They weren't mystery schools at all. They were taught advanced science and so on, these kings. And they were taught a very specific modality. They were taught to be servants of the people. And so that Grail bloodline of kings fostered by the Anunnaki went from Sumer through Egypt through and into the Hebrew situation Essenes, the Essene community, which was out in the desert somewhat. And their whole purpose was the men and women only came together, man and wife only came together at certain months of the year, so that because they were actually producing children to be brought up as the in this extra bloodline, extra enhanced bloodline, to be Grail kings, Grail special bloodline, which ends up coming all the way through now to the end product, so to speak, is a gentleman I know in Scotland, Prince Michael, and he should be on the throne of England, but they've kept him pinned down all this time. And that bloodline has been dispersed out through the population. But at any rate, we'll go back to emulation. Those of us, those humans who emulated Enki and rulers to be servants of the people and so on, were actually the real Jesus and Mary were in that line. And they were married, they had children, and so on, so on, so on. And it didn't, the Grail bloodline didn't start as that novel that came out a little while ago said, what's his name? It started with Jesus and Mary. It started all the way back in Sumer and
right.
All the way up.
Neil, I want to ask you about the use of gold, not only to line the atmosphere by the Anunnaki of their home planet, Planet X or Nibiru, but also their use of white powdered gold, their apparent use of white powdered gold for purposes of life extension. What can you tell me about the use of monatomic or white powdered gold, which incidentally is available on the World Wide Web, and some people make all kinds of great claims for it, but of course the FDA doesn't allow claims like that to be made, and but it's still about it's still available. Do you think that there's anything to that, the use of gold for life extension?
Yes, I do, because I'm ingesting it myself. there are, I get it from whitepowdergold.com. And
you take it yourself?
Yes, I do.
How long have you been taking it, Neil?
About a couple of years, I think, 2 years, 3 years.
Tell my listeners what kind of an effect. Is there any palpable change that you perceive as a result of taking it? How may it has it affected, to your knowledge, your health, including any prior conditions that you might have had, or just your overall state of mind and well-being?
I would say that the effects, there are no huge noticeable or disconcerting effects. It's very subtle. I take only 4 drops a day. But I am 82 and feel that one of the reasons I've reached 82 pretty comfortably, although I did come down with some congestive heart failure within the last 2 years. I think the reason for that is that I did a little research on the web, and I don't want to get into too far into that, but watch out for fluoride in the drinking water. It displaces the essential iodine in your thyroid. I had no idea about that. And your thyroid is right in the back of your heart. And so, but I fortunately found a good cardiologist who is holistic, and so I'm getting better.
Neil, have you mentioned to your cardiologist that my brother happens to be a doctor down in Florida. Have you mentioned to your cardiologist that you're using white powdered gold?
I did just recently, and I don't think he was very familiar with it at all. So
okay.
I gave him some literature. I gave him some literature. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How many years do you think the Anunnaki lived here on this planet? It would seem to be that it was in the hundreds of years, right?
It was thousands of years. Yeah, they went by shars. S-H-A-R is the word in English. And a shar is one revolution of their planet around the sun, 3,600 years. And some of them that were in official positions were recorded as having lived, I think, like 8 or 11 shars. They had the relative immortality or extended lifespan down quite a ways, and I think that was the other reason for them taking gold out of here. I think, in fact, as Sir Lawrence Gardner has shown with his very meticulous scholarship, in 1900, Sir Flinders Petrie, one of the leading archaeologists of his day, discovered what seemed to be the ruins of stone ruins of a temple on top of Mount Horeb. But then he realized that it was a very strange place because it had chemistry benches and all kinds of things, and it was a foundry sort of a type of thing there. And then he found that there were six huge rooms that had this fine white powder in them, like storage rooms. And apparently, having been uncovered, the stuff blew away rapidly. But he had some of it tested in England, and they said, "We don't know what this is." And Gardner says that all the evidence shows that this was the place where Moses went up to learn how to become Akhenaten, as a Moses went up to learn how to become properly Hebrew from Jethro, who was the foundry foreman. Eventually, Akhenaten apparently married Jethro's daughter, according to the Old Testament. And this was Mount Horeb. And so, yes, the Anunnaki were heavily into that. So this was their, actually, this was their main manufacturing plant for monoatomic coal.
We're running out of time. I want to get to the crux of the issue of how the human race should respond to the Anunnaki, what our position should be politically and socially and every other way toward the Anunnaki, when and if they land. The first one that I read, Breaking the God Spell, deals a lot with these issues, and I'd like to know what you think our position should be. What should we say to them at the time that they land?
Well, there's two things that influence my thinking along that line. One is try to be as quick as I can about this.
Yes.
One is the A.R. Borden in talking about the link, if this is true, says that there is a bit of conflict between the Anunnaki that are still on the planet here, kind of in the background, and an incoming group from planet X, Nibiru, that want to come here and establish relations with humans, and we have to see how that plays out. I myself think that one of the reasons why this is being publicized, if you will, in such a fashion, is so that we are not afraid of this situation because there is conflict between the two groups, and they're not focused on us so much as coming back here to take over the planet or whatever.
Well, where are these guys? Do you think? Where do you think they might be based? The ones that are in the vicinity of the Earth, living. You're saying that they're living here and passing for human. Is that what you're saying, essentially?
Yes, I've heard very strange things from different sources. I've heard that they are sometimes public, and one of them was actually shot on an army base or something. That's the weirdest thing I've heard. I've heard that they seem to be hanging out in Tibet. I have no idea, no way of vetting this. And then on the other hand, they may be living, you know, within populated areas, and who knows? They may even be in the Pentagon. But this is total speculation on my part. I'm only repeating some of the weirder things that were some of the things that I've heard. And then on the other hand, my focus currently, along with C.B. Scott Jones, my associate in our think tank called Cosmic Humanity, focused on the leading edge of the leading edge, if we possibly can, you know, find it, and we're preoccupied in a sense about how to interact with the Anunnaki when they do show up here or as they show up. I think that we need to reconcile with them. I think that they owe us, quite frankly. They said that they gave us very short lifespans, and the emulation that we did of Enlil, who was the nasty Jehovah Yahweh one, has turned out as sort of the basis of the attitude of the male chauvinist kind of, what do we call them, God-fearing religions.
Mm-hmm.
The Hebrew, the Catholic, Roman Catholic Empire,
Neil, we're running out of time. I just want to ask you: do you think that we should one of the things we should consider asking for are reparations of some form toward the Anunnaki?
I think that not some well reparations, yes, but only in the sense of technology, advanced technology, mm-hmm. and genetics and so on that mm-hmm. can straighten us up. Genetically give us the longer lifespans that we're coming with. I'm signed up for cryogenic suspension myself. Gives a whole new meaning to chilling out. To cover my debt because I'm practicing immortal. I'm finished with the diaper trip, and this is my planet. I want to stay around a long time, and it would be better if I could do it just genetically and not have to not go into the deep freeze tank. Temporary. And I think the new human is already on the horizon. I mean, look at the kids that are coming, that are being born now with paranormal abilities and so on. I think yes, they do owe us, but reparation should be in the sense of correcting some of the things that they did to make us a slave race and to give us the kind of human dignity that we deserve, and that a lot of us are fighting for at this particular point.
Okay. I want to thank you very much, Neil Freer, for being my guest tonight on Radio Doomsday Live. The program is on every Thursday night at 12 midnight Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Pacific time on bbsradio.com, station number 2. Our sponsor, Buy Emergency Foods. It's the best place to go for the lowest prices and the best quality emergency food, survival food, whatever you want to call it. This is just good-tasting food, and you need to stock up on this. I'm talking from personal experience, having just endured 5 days in complete darkness here in New York City. They can be reached at 888-543-7345. That's 888-543-7345. Neil, before you go, how can people reach you? What's your website?
NeilFreer.com.
N-E-I-L. Freer.
F-R-E-E-R.com.
.com.
Right.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much, Neil.
They can check me out also by typing my name into Amazon. There are more details and bio and that sort of stuff on there. And be glad to hear from anybody, and your books as well.
Okay. Well, thank you, Neil, again. It's been a pleasure having you on. My pleasure. Important questions for me. We're still here. It was like being in the twilight zone. I swear, you know, like you try to adapt and you have no choice but to adapt. But it really took, it's taken me and others days and days and days to recover from this, what you know, can only be described really as an ordeal. So I want to thank you, my listeners, for tuning in to Radio Doomsday Live. And it's bbsradio.com. Incidentally, you should check out my new website, cosmicmajority.org. And in coming weeks, I'll be discussing more about the cosmic majority concept. No, it's not the moral majority. This is the cosmic majority, which goes much, much farther than those people ever imagined. And it's an organization for very much for today. This is Mike Luckman signing off, and I appreciate your listening in. Tell your friends, tell members of your family, make it a habit. We're only about 6 weeks away now, 7 weeks away from the December 21st date. No, it's not the end of the world, but it is the beginning of a very important transition. Unfortunately, it also comes at a time when there will be other severe environmental disasters, and people need to learn how to prepare for it. So thank you very much, and see you next Thursday night.
That's great. It starts with an earth.